All over the world, there are people thinking about and creating a future of live digital events and performances.
They're disparate innovators who are artists, tech founders, nonprofits, and investors, and they need a place to gather and share ideas.
That's what the Get Together is all about.
I'm Jess, a theater creator who loves bringing people together around technology, art, and the internet.
And I'm Joe, a tech and media startup vet with over 10 years of experience growing and operating businesses.
Thanks for getting together with us. Let's dig in. Oh, hi, Joe.
Oh, hello.
We've had a busy day and I haven't seen you as much as I would like. So I wanted to ask you a question.
Ooh, hit me.
That I got asked at a dinner last night that I thought was a great question. I was at dinner with an amazing woman named Lynn Filderman, who has a company called Curate on Purpose. And she helps curate executive stages for conferences. And she's so badass because her sort of perspective in the conference world is that it's boring as fuck.
Not wrong.
Not wrong. And so she's like, she's built this entire business out of being able to curate stages and help executives understand what is the story they have to tell and what is the thing that we like all want to hear about, and like how to ask questions instead of just saying like, I did this with my company and we checked these boxes and everyone pat me on the back, you know, that stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like closed questions and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. And she's also like, she just programs like just fire stages. Like you get 15 minutes and you are off that stage.
Does she come out with that hook and just like yank people?
Totally, yeah. We'll have to have her on the podcast at some point because she's got a lot of wisdom and really good stuff to share. But in a surprise to no one, now that you know what she does, this is the question she asked me about 3/4 of the way through our dinner last night. What is a thing you are working on right now that you personally are just most excited for and why?
Ooh, this one goes inward a little bit for me, but it comes back out and into our business in a fun way. But I, for the longest time, have like, I've been like, this is going to sound so lame, but I've had like, you know, ever since I was a kid, I could like pick things up pretty quickly, pretty easily. Mm-hmm. And like in school, that was a really helpful talent and skill. Mm-hmm. And like, especially inside of a permission-based structure like a school where it's mm-hmm. like, here's how you succeed. Here's how you get praised. Here's how you do well. Pretty like
nailing it.
Easy environment within which to succeed.
Yeah.
And then like my mid-20s when that structure kind of went away and it was replaced by just like pure unfettered capitalism and corporate nonsense, had a bit of a panic. It was like, what am I? Who am I?
Oh, no.
What do I do?
Oh, no.
Because across my life, it was really fun and really easy to pick up new things and always be trying new things. And like, I never specialized, right? I didn't become an engineer. I don't know how to wire a house for electrical. Like, I never had what I considered like hard skills that I could just be like, hi, this is what I do. Hire me. Hi, this is what I do. I have value. Hi, this is what I do.
Hire me.
Yeah. And so I've always like had that feeling like, okay, I can do a lot of random shit and I am, you know, smart enough and all this other stuff, but I never had like hard skills and I always felt like I needed or wanted them.
Hmm.
Eventually I got over that feeling for the most part, but now I'm like,
I have some questions about that later.
Oh yeah. Hit me. But now I've sort of gone down a path of, okay, one of those hard skills that I've always wanted is something a bit more tangible in the programming world. I can do a little bit of SQL. I can play around with some CSS and HTML, but it's all just like self-taught to solve a problem.
Mm-hmm.
Like I don't actually know what I'm doing. And I love the idea of knowing what I'm doing and like the world of opportunities that opens up. And like the big difference for me is that it's not me like seeking out some skill to make me hireable or to give me value in the face of, I don't know, my parents or something like that.
Yeah.
It's because I'm like, this seems cool and I want to do stuff with it. So I'm embarking on a course to learn Python, and then separately but connected, I'm really interested in the language Solidity, which is the one used for a lot of these Web3 smart contracts.
Oh.
which is that where it kind of ties a little bit back into our business, where it's like, that's a world, you know, the Web3 DAO's world that I'm like, this is cool. And there's fun stuff coming and we're going to do fun stuff with it.
Yeah.
And the more I know, the more I can do personally, I think the faster we can run at it.
For sure.
And it just feels and it seems really like fun and exciting. And so that whole journey from feeling deficient in my hard skills to getting over that deficiency to now being able to like enjoy wanting to achieve them with, I'm sure underneath there's a little bit of still like, I need that value.
Yeah,
I need
those, for sure, you know, sure.
That praise, but that's where I'm at.
I have to unmask the lie here. So I just acted like I didn't know you were learning Python and Solidity. Of course I know that, but I'm glad I asked that question because I didn't know that you were so excited about it and that's why you were excited. Like, I love knowing that. And that I have some, can I ask you some follow on questions?
Hell yeah.
I can't ever get rid of my like host interviewer.
It makes it more fun, right? If we just left that, like, that's boring. Yeah. I just said a whole bunch of words. Now we need to clarify some of them.
So is Solidity, I think you might've told me this, but I don't remember. Is Solidity related in some way to Python? Like, do they have touch points with each other?
They're both programming languages. No, but
it's not like Solidity has like some kind of base in Python that where you'll know.
No, they're like, I think my interpretation, again, as someone who doesn't have these hard skills, is that there's commonalities between all of these object-oriented programming languages, but they're different. It's like, you know, romance languages. It's like, okay, they all got some stuff that kind of makes sense across all of them, but by knowing English, I do not know Spanish. By knowing Spanish, I don't necessarily know French. But, like, you can suss some things out underneath it and learn them a little bit more easily because you have some of those fundamentals.
I'm also positive that I asked you this exact question last week and I don't remember the answer. What does object-oriented language mean?
Ooh, let's go find a definition because I don't think I could do it justice.
Oh, well, maybe I didn't ask you this. That makes me feel better.
I'm straight up Googling. What is object-oriented?
Great. Meanwhile, Chris Ashworth is at home listening, being like, you noobs.
Noobs. Yeah, we just need to get Chris back on here. Okay, object-oriented programming is a programming paradigm. I've been using the term paradigm a lot recently, and I want to stop it. But it's a paradigm based on the concept of objects, which can contain data and code. Data in the form of fields and code in the form of procedures.
This feels like when I learned that there was a word called widget that everyone knew what the definition of was. And I was like, what does that have to do with the actual word widget? And like, why does everyone know what this is? This feels like that exact same moment.
It does. It does feel like that.
Yeah, this podcast is renamed Just Learns About Stupid Business Shit. That's not actually that stupid, but who's... okay, wait. I have some more questions. I did not know that you considered yourself a generalist. When I think about your career prior to meeting you, my perception is like you had all of these really high-level roles at really big companies that I don't know a lot of people like that I'm friends with that like kind of got there and did that. How do you think that happened with this perception of yourself that you're a generalist and that you don't have a skill that's easily understandable? Because in my brain, I'm having a hard time computing, you know, corporate, well, startup saying like, hey, come be our whatever you were, advanced senior
director of revenue operations.
Yeah, that guy, when you're actually kind of a generalist.
Yeah, oh, that is a good question. I think one part of it is sort of like as you get more knowledgeable about anything, you start to realize how little you know about anything.
Sure.
I think my lens and my view has always been like, okay, I am good at, you know, working inside of spreadsheets. I don't know, something that's like, that's pretty tangible.
Yeah.
But I can always look at someone else and be like, well, that person's just like so much better. And there's like a whole class of people that I can now see, given where I've gotten to, that are just like worlds better than me. You know, I feel like sports is a good place for this, where it's like you can be the absolute best, you know, soccer player on your high school team, and then you get to college and you're like, well, fuck.
Yeah.
There's a lot of good people here. Yeah. And then from college to, you know, whatever, like to the Major League Soccer, and then be like, oh, damn, there's even more better people.
Yeah.
And like, I feel like wherever I am, I always see that next group and be like, okay, well, I'm not that group, so I'm therefore not the best, not an expert, not this.
Hmm.
And that's actually a big part of, you know, through therapy, realizing like, oh, I don't need to or want to be the best in a whole bunch of these things. I actually quite like being a generalist, and I like leveled with that. And so maybe it is unfair to just call myself a generalist.
Yeah, it's definitely unfair, for sure.
But I think that's why it's like, you know, one part imposter syndrome, one part like I'm not an expert in this type of business model, or I'm not the best person at Excel or this or that, but like, I can get shit done. So that's good. I like that. I feel good and want to prioritize that over knowing every like minute detail about how, you know, to build a cool model in Excel, which I also like, but.
That was a great answer to that question. Lynn, that was for you. I hope you're listening.
Thank you, Lynn, for that good question. I feel like all of my conversations with Lynn have had a little piece of that, of like, none of this small talk bullshit. Let's get into it.
For sure. I love it. All right. Well, now that we've had a real good catch-up time, I wanted to talk real quick before we dive into this week's episode about what's coming up on said podcast.
Oh my God, I'm so excited to hear. Jess doesn't tell me any of these things.
Never.
So I'm in real time. Never. With you.
I'm really excited for this month. So next week, we are going to be chatting with Broadway's treasure, the incredible Kate Baldwin. And I'm so excited. Yeah. Hooray!
SFX. Can we have some clapping sound
effects? Yeah, I'll put it in. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Now that I'm editing the podcast in our interim with no podcast producer, we will definitely be having SFX.
I love the idea of like Broadway's treasure. Like, what a lovely thing to be described as. I was like, you are a treasure.
She's a treasure. And we're friends with her and collaborators. And that is wild. Sometimes, like, 18-year-old Jess is looking from the outside at the situations we're in, just going like big and wide-eyed. Like, oh, my God. We did it. We were here. We did it. So we're having Kate on because she is directing the stage show of Amplify 2022, which is this awesome concert that Maestro Music puts on every year. They're an organization that supports and drives the work forward of women and non-binary musicians in the musical theater. So super important organization that does incredible work. So Kate's directing the stage show, and then I'm directing the broadcast part of it. So we're collaborating together on it, and the show's on March 28th. We thought we'd have her on to talk about what it's been like to add sort of a live digital directorship onto her list of skills, because, you know, she's like a Tony-nominated actress. She dove in head first to learning all this digital stuff, and it's been amazing to watch.
Oh, I can't wait to talk to her and to hear how it's been for her, kind of diving in head first to this whole new world that she clearly has, like, the thoughts, the ideas, the creativity to handle. But it's a whole new world. That's exciting and scary.
Yeah, it's gonna be fun. I'm really looking forward to it. And then what else is on our map for this month, Joe?
All right, so after Kate, which, like, nothing will ever top that episode, is my guess, having not even recorded it yet. we're getting back into Live Digital 101. We're keeping it going. Woo-hoo. And we're gonna go forward by going back, by looking back, giving back to the Give Back concert.
Whoa, that was a really good transition, Joe.
Oh, I'm getting good. Podcast transition expert.
Not a generalist.
Not a generalist. But as some of you may know on the show, I love just the concept of etymology. Like, where did things start? Where did they come from? How did they get to where they are? And so we're gonna flip the script a little bit. I'm gonna be talking and asking questions to Jess about the Give Back concert, because I wasn't there.
I wish you were.
Me too. But can't change the past. We can only charge forward.
That's true. So next week, to recap, Kate Baldwin on talking about Amplify 2022. And if you want to join us for the Amplify concert in the immersive virtual venue we're building for digital audiences, you can actually register for free at bit.ly/TGT-Amplify2022, and we'll put that in the show notes for you as well. We'd love for you to join. There's going to be a ton of people from all around the world joining us in the virtual venue. We're going to have 300 people at Le Poisson Rouge in New York City, and we're going to connect everybody together through the broadcast and before and after the show. It's going to be awesome.
It's going to be amazing, and I'm renting a pink tuxedo.
Woo-hoo! And then, of course, the week after that, back to Live Digital 101, like Joe said, breaking down the Give Back concert, which was Broadway's first hybrid concert, in which no one was talking about this stuff, and we just sort of figured everything out for ourselves. We figured we'd save you the work, the headache, but also the joy. You will never get the joy of getting to do it for the first time. So sorry.
Yeah, think of all those tears you would have cried trying to figure out problems exactly. The night before. Those beautiful tears.
Oh my God. Remind me to tell you about Jermaine coming in and crying at one of the Give Back concerts the morning of the sound check. It's so good.
Noting it down.
All right. Well, I think we've done all of the recapping and business we need to do. So with that, thanks for getting together with us and let's get to it.
I was thinking this week we could talk about an article that I saw recently and that we actually talked about in Clubhouse, for those of you who joined us in Clubhouse. It's from, you know, the world's best publication, BroadwayWorld.com.
Indefatigable reposter of press releases exactly how they are put out with no changes.
I love it. I love it. They know what they are. They know what they're designed to be. And they do it. They do their job well. And I appreciate them because I didn't find this article elsewhere. I found it here.
Oh, nice.
But this one, headline, New York Public Library for the Performing Arts launches Theater and Technology Fellowship. And I saw it and I was just like, this
what?
Is perfect.
What?
I don't even need to read the rest of it. Repost, reshare, retumble. I wish Tumblr still existed. I guess it does technically, yeah. But you know what I mean.
Does it feel like the world's ending? I'm like, I just am transported back. I'm like, how long did we talk about the intersection of technology and theater with no one understanding it or caring? And now the public library is launching a theater and technology fellowship. I could cry. It's so exciting.
It feels so exciting. I mean, just seeing the words theater and technology in a headline
that isn't
somewhere, somewhere near the words New York Public Library. I was like, what is this world? Amazing. I'm so happy that other people are speaking our language, that are championing the same thing, that are going to be in conversation with us on this podcast, hopefully.
Yeah.
Like, it's just so great. And as well for it to be like a public institution, that was the other sort of layer of this that got me really excited. It's like, it's not some venture thing. It's not some grift. It's like a public good. It's the acknowledgement of the fact that this is important.
That's awesome.
And it made me think about, you know, the UK and past conversations on this podcast about how, you know, they do just a little bit better of a job acknowledging the fact that there is a sort of intangible social good to the arts and to culture and to the feelings that come from that stuff that I feel like American culture just like doesn't do the same way. It's a little bit too tethered to capitalism. How is art making money? Or Puritanism, where it's like, how is art making money? And this feels like a conscious acknowledgement of, hey, this is important. It's important for all these intangible, unmeasurable reasons. And we're going to make it happen. And I was like, thank you. Thank you, New York Public Library. I appreciate you and your cool lion logo.
So we, of course, have included the link to this article that we're chatting about in the show notes. So if you need to pause for a second and do a little reading, please feel free.
Go take a read. It's like a 3-minute read. You'll be through it fast.
For those who want to just hang out with us and stay on the podcast, can you give us the TLDR on this?
Yeah. So, I mean, as the headline alludes to, the New York Public Library for the Performing Arts has created a fellowship and is currently accepting applications through, checking the date, April 15th, 2022.
Ooh, you got time, y'all.
Yeah, so like you could actually hear this podcast, read this article, and still apply for this thing. It's really awesome. But they have opened up this fellowship, and it's one of those great ones where they're like, hey, come in, we'll give you some money, do some stuff, figure it out. It doesn't have a ton of like, hey, you absolutely need to export this or do that or change this. And I'm looking for like the topic sentence that will help me summarize this well over audio. So they're looking for a scholar to work on projects that examine technologies documented in their collections or using innovative technologies to study theater history. So they're opening up their collections. They're going to, you know, maybe help make them more accessible in some way. But it's a very open-ended fellowship, which I think is so cool about it. It's like, here, we're giving you resources, and we just want you to go do something with it. It feels a bit like a hackathon.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, come and just crank on it. Just come up with something. Like, anything is good. Let's just go. Forward progress is all we're looking for. And so it's a 4-week residency. And, oh, this is cool. I didn't notice this. Those 4 weeks do not need to be contiguous. That doesn't really matter a ton. But, like, go do some cool stuff. Yeah. But I love this idea of the New York Public Library acknowledging, hey, we have this wealth of information.
Yeah.
And we think through the lens of technology, we can make it more accessible. We could make it, something, you know, blending what they have currently mm-hmm. with technology to make it more useful, more accessible, better in some way. And I love that they have that vision. And then like the conscious acknowledgement of like, hey, we're not doing that already. And we don't know exactly how to do that. So we're just going to throw a little time and money at it and see what happens.
That's badass. And for those of you, if you're listening and you have never been to the New York Public Library, it's kind of like our Mecca when you're in the arts, because it is the only place where you can find a lot. Like they have a crazy sheet music collection, crazy book collection on theater, but probably most notoriously, it is where you can go and watch the archive videos of a good amount of Broadway shows. So the unions have historically allowed for an archival recording to be made. And it's like this great, well, back when I moved to New York City, it was this crazy process.
I was going to ask, like, can you describe the process? Because I've heard this story a little bit and it just like, it seems insane. And like, you have to go through all these. I just like, I want to hear the story and I want everyone to hear it.
I want to say Emily, our friend Emily McGill has been there very, very recently because she started just for fun, started to go watch shows. And I think they've vastly improved this. But so you had to get a New York Public Library card. And I'm sure I'm going to miss things because this was so long ago. So you had to have the public library card, and then you had to make the appointment to go, and you had to go through the research or the security desk, and you had to have an ID and all this stuff. And then you had to sign in. And a long time ago, you had to be a, and I'm making huge air quotes, a researcher. Like you had to, you couldn't just go watch for fun, quote, you know, unquote. So like we all lied. I'm doing research, right? Because you got to sign in and say why you're watching this video or whatever. Mm-hmm. And there was also some rules that I can't remember around, because like I'm going to retell a particular time I went there to watch a show I was about to choreograph. And what they wanted to avoid at that time and were worried about was people stealing choreography. So I can't exactly remember, but you couldn't have like paper and pencil out and all that stuff. Like,
so wild.
Yeah, it was crazy. And so I had gone to watch The Robber Bridegroom, which is this bonkers musical from the 70s, I think, that like literally when I read it, I'd never seen it. And I read it and I was like, what the fuck is this show? And what do I do with this? Because it's like one of those shows where like Rosamund lives with her parents and then she wanders away in the woods and she meets Jamie and Jamie's got half her his face covered with plum juice. So you can't see who he is. And then Rosamund runs away with Jamie and then Jamie punches her and rapes her and she's really in love with him and they sing songs and then he falls asleep and she sings one of my favorite songs in the whole musical canon, theater canon, to him while he's sleeping, called Sleepy Man, as you might, you know, expect.
It's a good name. It's a good name.
Yeah. And like, it's just, it's such a, and then there's a stepmother named Salome and she's like making crazy, it's a nuts musical. So I was literally like, I have to watch this. I'm not going to steal the choreography. I'm not going to do it. I just don't understand.
Just need a tether in reality. Also, I just want to like pause and compliment. How the hell do you remember all those names and the plot and the plum juice? Like it wasn't blackberry juice. It was plum juice.
I don't actually think it might be blackberry juice, funny enough.
I didn't even read this damn play.
Well, you know, funny enough, working on this show, when I was choreographing it, was like one of the most like formative theatrical experiences I've ever had, because I got to work with, slight side detour, sorry y'all, but Everett Quinton was cast as Salome. And Everett Quinton co-founded the Ridiculous Theater Company with Charles Ludlam, which is this very, very, this is a company that's really important to me and a lot of theater makers from the 70s, 80s, maybe a little bit into the 90s before they shut down. So this was like huge that he was in it. And then I played Rosamund and I choreographed it. And it's the only time I was ever cast as the like romantic lead of a musical, because I'm like a character actress, you know what I mean? But this director just believed in me and thought I would make a really interesting Rosamund. And it's a beautiful show, even though it's weird. And it does still have some of my favorite music in it ever. So it's just like one of those things I remember a lot about.
You're steeped in it. That makes sense.
Yeah. Steeped in the blackberry juice. So
steeped in the blackberry
back to
juice.
The New York Public Library. I've gotten through, you know, the Minority Report security. I've lied on the ledger, you know, to make them think that I'm not going to steal this choreography, which I didn't.
You've ridden the mining cart down 100%. Into Gringotts.
Yes, yes. Gotten all the side eyes from the librarians. So then you go into this like back room that I didn't know existed. And they take you to a cubicle, which I can only assume is like, do you remember microfiche?
Oh, I remember microfiche. Yeah. Do like you know how to say it? Fiche? I don't actually know how to pronounce it. It's one of those words like niche and niche. Yeah, I'm just like, microfiche. I don't know. I love it.
Yeah. It's like a microfiche station. It's like you're, it's kind of my desk, but there's walls. So I can't see the musical, whatever someone's watching next to me. They don't want me to see the other shows that are being
You're not
played.
Researching that show.
Exactly. And they've, I don't remember if they took all your shit away or you had to check it. I don't remember, but you don't have stuff, you know, and you're sitting in an open space except for those two little cubicle walls, you know, to watch this show with headphones. Mm-hmm. So then you start watching the show, and if you're me watching The Robert Bridegroom for the first time, you get to that part where Jamie punches Rosamund and then starts singing Love Stolen from the Cookie Jar is the lyric.
The hell is this playing?
Exactly. And then I just started cackling out loud because I was exactly your reaction. What the hell is this play, this musical? Yeah.
Are there other people down there with you?
Yeah, 100%. So then I'm getting shushed because you can't make noise. But I'm like, but Patti LuPone is on my screen and like this guy is punch. I think it was the Brady Bunch guy was punching this girl. But and it was somehow OK and turned into a musical comedy. It was overwhelming. And that was what it used to be like to go to the New York Public Library. So to take the leap now. Right. And to look at them as one of the first institutions to really say this matters in America, I love because that's such a giant cavern.
This feels like one of those that we should come back to in our recap episode that we end up doing on mm-hmm. the podcast. Mm-hmm. I would love to know what comes of this, what has been shared, what has been changed. Maybe we can go visit the New York Public Library together.
We should
and see what this updated process is like, because I enjoy imagining it being a Gringotts like adventure. I doubt it's going to be like that anymore.
Like a what?
Gringotts?
What's that?
Oh right, you haven't seen Harry Potter.
No.
Gringotts is the bank in the Harry Potter universe. Oh. It's very complicated and secure, I guess. And
okay.
I don't know. All this weird magic that makes it hard to access the vaults.
Oh, okay. What else got you thinking when you were reading about this?
Well, so I was just so curious, like, what could they actually do? Right? I love to think in extremes of like, okay, what's the most extreme thing they could do is like make every single piece of information in their archive available publicly using, you know, digital technology in some way. I don't think that's going to happen for a myriad of reasons I don't think I will ever understand as it relates to unions and whatever, all that stuff. Like, they're probably just not going to make all this publicly accessible tomorrow mm-hmm. or on April 16th after this person starts. But they're going to do something. And I'm curious, like, as someone who knows a bit more about this library and all the information inside of it and the, like, complicated minutia of what is and isn't allowed to be seen and consumed outside of this library. Mm-hmm. For various union and legal related reasons. Like, what do you think they're going to do? Like, how are they going to make this better?
Well, I might be inclined to go sideways to answer that because I'm looking at another paragraph in this article that says the project that the person needs to work on and then present at the end of this residency can revolve around topics such as digital editions of play texts, research on the history of technical theater, scenic and lighting design, right? And the technology that is used. Virtual reality performance or analysis of theatrical data documented in their collections. And the thing that keeps jumping out to me about that is that in some ways, this just feels like a huge gesture and definitive stamp that technology and theater matters. So that, like, maybe it's not that systems improve or something gets changed at the library, but that it's literally funding research on technology initiatives inside the theater, something that everyone has done their darndest to pretend like it wasn't happening, you know?
Yeah.
Is maybe at the end of the day just a huge, like, gesture with the weight of the New York Public Library behind it. And maybe that it is really the ongoing investment in research, which leads to innovation.
Oh, that's interesting. So, like, viewing this, which, now that you say it, it's like, duh, of course, that's all it could be, really, with this little amount of time and this, you know, relatively little amount of money compared to, like, you know, how much a startup might get funded to do a similar project. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the opening sort of gambit. It's the first shot. It's just, it's a step forward.
Yeah.
And whatever it is will be foundational to whatever comes next.
Yeah.
And it's the singular fact of the library saying, this is important. like that opens up that gateway.
Yeah. You know, ooh, and I just had a really like bizarre but great thought. You know how we talk about like in our work with live digital that the broadcast isn't the only thing that matters. The audience experience is part of that whole live digital equation, mm-hmm. and allowing lots of space for the unknown to happen from live digital audiences' experiences at the broadcast is a big part of it. I think that kind of is at play here too, because think about not only the research that's going to be done in the presentation, but like the New York Public Library has an audience. So people are going to come to this project presentation and they're going to think about what's being presented, right? And they're going to have their own ideas when they walk out of the public library. Like the dominoes are really cool and crazy, right?
I feel like whoever this human is that gets this fellowship should be documenting digitally their entire progress through what they are doing at the intersection of theater and technology for the New York Public Library. And then that becomes, you know, part of their final presentation, but maybe we get to consume it in little bits across the entire year that they're working on this.
Yeah.
And it becomes like this meta analysis of like, I'm going to show you inside of the fellowship, but it's also part of the fellowship yeah. that I'm showing you inside
so
of.
Cool.
Like, oh, that'd be so cool. That feels very, you know, early vlog of just like showing the process becoming the art of like whatever you're actually doing.
Absolutely. Oh, which is like our favorite thing in the entire world. I know I can't help but think I'm, of course, like two people I know, one of whom comes, you know, and chats with us quite frequently, Louisa Lyons and her work with Film Live Musicals, which is just this enormous database and body of academic research on filmed musicals. Like, oh my gosh, having some money and heft with the library behind that work for her, I feel like would just be so cool. And then I think of another person I met right before COVID named Yakov, I believe, who has a project. He's a data nerd. He's like in data mining. He's like, he loves building data models and scraping and like, he's so smart. And I think he worked for like a hedge fund or something, but he started the Broadway Data Project. And I was meant to tell you, we should have him on the podcast for sure.
I love it.
Yakov Bressler. And I think him too, like, right. Like his work could inspire so much, especially when it's attached to New York Public Library, Amy Fogelman at Broadway Codes. Just think of all these really cool people who have had to work at the fringes for a really long time. You know what I mean? And this centers them in a way.
All right. So I hope if you're listening to this, whoever's on the selection committee, just that to you.
Yeah. Call me.
That you are, that you're prioritizing things that are outside of your comfort zone or that you don't understand.
It makes me think of that artist we've been working with from Oregon Shakespeare Festival, Scarlett, who, you know, said she came to OSF to work on the innovation and strategy team to lead it because she wanted to center the fringe, right? And that's exactly what we're talking about.
Centering the fringe.
I'm excited to cheer the incredible people we know on as they apply for it, and super excited to find out what other folks are around that have been doing this work. I hope they make this all public. And we should have whomever gets it, and maybe all the candidates, the finalists on the podcast too.
let's get them all. I want at the very least to pitch them the idea of documenting what they are doing and releasing it in more frequent bites across that year, because I think that would be really cool.
Oh, it would be so cool.
Maybe against whatever contract they end up signing, but oh, well, we'll figure that out.
Anarchy!
And with anarchy, thanks for getting together with us.
This is the space for you, us, and all y'all other anarchists getting that public library cash money to learn technology. So share this with someone who should apply for the fellowship and then get in touch with us.
Go, do it. Do it now. You have until April 15th, 2022.
I'm Jez.
And I'm Joe. And
we'll see you back here next week.
Oh, I hate you. I knew you were going to do that. I was waiting you out.